Hello all, welcome to another session with Random Thoughts of with Isaac, Vault Edition. Today, we go through the archives and pull out an old story, an old vlog, about Isaac telling the story, which is me, about his first purchase of a classic car. To tell you that's a bit rocky, with lots of ups and downs, is an understatement. So I hope you grab your popcorn, put your headphones on, get ready, because it's a very long but enjoyable story of how a youngster kind of bit on more than he could chew.
I hope everyone's having a great end of 2020. I know this year's been a kind of a crazy year in regards to this pandemic that we've all been kind of stuck with, from the cause and effect, from either just work's been changed or career's been changed, and many people even had been restricted to work from home, and some people were out of employment. So I hope everyone's back into the swing of things with the beginning of 2021 just days around the corner. And to start off the new year, a little bit pre-new year per se, I thought I'd share a story with you guys. The story about how I've always wanted to own a classic car. Now, it may sound daunting, the whole classic realm, because, I mean, everyone says they want to do it, but how many people actually go out and do it? There's plenty of people who go out and do it, but what I'm getting to is people my age. So I'm in my early 20s, and I have purchased a 1966 Ford Mustang. So before we get into the story of how I got it, what I was told about it, and where it's at now, we got to get a little bit of background on this. I got to give you guys the full scope of the whole, you know, why Mustang and why, you know, a classic car. And part of the reason I went with this was it was 2020 and I didn't need my current daily driver, so I went with that. But before we get into this, back. So back in when I was growing up in Washington State, my dad, behind his huge shop, which was twice the size of our house, it was like a 20 by 30 foot shop, or I don't even know, it was huge, huge is all I can say. So this big shop that had huge bay doors on it, you could put a boat in there. On the side of it, he had a tarp on this piece of metal or whatnot. At the time, I was like 7 or 8 years old. And one day, I was just poking around, and I pulled back the tarp to reveal a black 65 Mustang, a coupe. And I thought at the time it was the coolest thing ever, except there was a lot of hornets and wasps around there, so I couldn't really just dive in and take a look further. And at the time, driving was not even a twinkle in my eye. I was 8 years old. I was just learning what math and science was at the time. But that car, from that point, just kind of spoke to me a little bit. And back in 2008, when I was like 9 or 10, when we moved from Washington State to South Carolina, we couldn't take the car with us. We had to sell the car. And unfortunately, just that's how it rolls when you move cross country. So we sold the car. We put the hunk of metal, and it needed a lot of work. I mean, it needed probably everything from what my dad's told me about it. But needless to say, I have a picture of that Mustang. There was no front bumper on it. All the grills were taken off. They were kind of just stuck in the trunk. And just kind of, it would have been a project car. It's absolutely a project car. Nothing that would have been driven overnight, by no means, but it would have been fun restoration project. Fast forward in time, I was in high school, and I still wanted that classic car, but it wasn't practical yet. And I had, my vision was to purchase a house. Once the house was all good and I was living there, get a structure that's a garage, something that you can encapsulate or enclose a vehicle that has potentially significant value, and then go from there. This year kind of threw that whole logic out of the gate, which I should have stayed with my original logic, because it's foolproof. There's a reason I had this vision, this plan, but I'm about 3 years ahead of myself, maybe even 2 years ahead of myself. Needless to say, I've learned a lot. So back in September, maybe even earlier than that, probably June or July, I've been working home at this point pretty much every day since March, when we were all, my employers told us to all go home. So without further ado, I went home. I've been working out of the basement at this point for the last, 4 or 5 months. And my brother comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, bro, I want to buy your car." I'm like, "Okay, give me a price." He gave me a price and we agreed, shook hands, and car's his. So for the next month or two, I was carless. I had no vehicle, no motor vehicle. I just, if I need stuff, I'd tag along or get rides with whomever's going anywhere. And then, I didn't need a car because I didn't go to the office. At the end of the July, early September, they said we were returning back to the office. I think it was every other day. So you would come in, go home, come in, go home, blah, 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 AP schedule. So I kind of needed a vehicle, but I was able to borrow a vehicle up until I needed one. So started doing some car shopping, and I didn't know what I wanted, but I knew I really kind of like said, no, I'm not going to do a pre-70s because I want safety features like seatbelts, airbags, analog brakes, or disc brakes. And I just knew that I wanted something better because there's innovation over the course of 20 years. So I had my heart set on an 80s to 90s vehicle, hopefully the 80s. But when I started doing tons of research, either there was no 80 vehicles, no vehicles in the 80s, or if you found one, everyone wanted a kidney for it. Like there was, I think it was an 86 or an 87 AMC. It wasn't an Eagle. It was nothing good. It was going to bug me. I don't even know what it's called, but anyways, it was an AMC like Rambler or it's on the tip of my tongue. What is that one called? Anyways, we're gonna move on. I don't know. It's this AMC hatchback, and it had all this stuff done with it, and the guy wanted like $8,100 for it, and you're like, this car KBB top value is like $8,100. There's no way that thing's worth $8,100. And a custom blue paint job, which was kind of cool, but just too much money for what he wanted. And at the time, I didn't know what I wanted until one day I'm just downstairs. It's like Friday night. I'm gaming. I'm just chilling out, stress relieving from work. And my dad came by and showed me an ad for a Mustang that was a decent price and it was running. Like it was engine run and it says drivable, like weekend cruiser. I'm like, okay, let's go take a look. So needless to say, I didn't know where Greenwood, South Carolina was, but that Saturday we took a cruise, which Greenwood is about 90 minutes out, so 3 hours round trip, which is a lot of time, I know, to go look at this vehicle. So we decided, like, okay, let's go take a look at this vehicle, and I will decide if I like it, if I don't like it, if I want it, if I don't want it, blah, 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 right? Well, there's a couple issues leading up to this, and we'll get to that. But, so you sit in the car for 90 minutes, you're anticipating, what do I need to look at? I don't know. If it runs, I guess it's fine. We'll make a deal, blah, blah, blah. So we get there. The guy was, he had it out of the garage he had down there. He had it running. I turned the engine. It was running. It sounded pretty good, to my knowledge, then. And we looked around the car. It didn't have any rust spots from what I saw, not around the fins of the wheel wells or any of that stuff. And again, I didn't know what I was looking for yet. And that's part of the knowledge thing that I know a lot now. But I looked around, popped the hood open. It looked good. Everything was spinning. Again, I'm a newbie over here. I don't know what I need. So right then, right there, I get asked, what do you think of it, for my dad? And I'm like, you know what? I like it. No banks are open. Can you save it until Monday or Tuesday next week? And the guy's like, and I'm like, I can give you a retainer. So I gave him like a couple $100 to put it on retainer, put it back in the garage, and we drove back home. And my dad was kind of like starstruck, but we were both kind of like, yeah, I knew what I wanted, right? I've always wanted a classic car. I wasn't anticipating I needed to do work on it. Maybe a little bit, but anyways. So part of it, you know, you drive 90 minutes back. So we spent like, you know, the whole 3 hours into this process. And I'm like, I'm excited because now I have to wait the whole weekend and then I have to do another 3 hours there and back. And hopefully the 90 minutes back driving the car, because the gentleman I purchased from said, you can drive this. It should be driver. It's a weekend cruiser. He said, I already restored everything. That's what he said. Yeah, this is where it's going to get rocky. So we go back that Monday or Tuesday, and we drove out like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. And so we get there, I think maybe 3 o'clock, and I give him the check. He gives me the keys. He gives me some other parts since I was being nice to him. So I got a couple parts that was helpful, and I back it out of the driveway. Or I open the door. I sit in. I put the key in the ignition, I turn it on, and put it in reverse. All good, right? As soon as I'm going out of the driveway, I look at my lap, and I'm like, where's the seatbelt? What I didn't realize was this car actually didn't have any seatbelts installed yet. I saw them in the cup holder in the back. They were just kind of laying there, like, great. So now I have to drive 90 minutes and pray that I just keep it on the ground. Okay, so that was a red flag, but I got it up there. It's all manual steering, so you're like chugging it, like 35 pounds of like pull force, and off we go. We go to the nearest gas station, I top her off, and then we hit like Route 25 or whatever the route is to get back to Greenville. We're driving, we're about 20 minutes in. I'm getting nervous because I've never driven a car like this before. And I was like, I was excited, but I was also nervous. I'm like, am I going to make it home? Dad's trailing me in the good car. Oh, no problem. So we're going down the interstate, or not even the interstate, it's just a side road. But anyways, we're driving down and it's like speed limit is like 45, maybe 60, and I'm pushing probably 60, 65. At least that's what speedometer said. And it was chugging. And I was like, okay, I don't know if this feels right. It feels like I'm chugging. So there was one time they started making some kind of funny noise. It's like a flap, 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 flap. Well, we pulled over, we took a look, and the wheel was getting extremely hot. So we took a second, we looked at it, and we're like, okay, well, maybe we can keep going slower, and hopefully we can get it. So we go up, and then it started making a click, click. So I swapped with my dad, he started driving it, and not to mention, at the same time, the car wanted to lean. Like, if you stopped on the brakes, or you, like, pressed the brakes, it really wanted to lean left, like, really bad. So we had to pull or counter that left by holding it very, very taut on the wheel so it wouldn't go loose. So we're driving not much more after we checked it out, and then you hear a big pop. So then the left tire blew, and we're flapping on nothing, and we pull it sideways, and then we change the tire out. Thankfully, there was a full spare in the back. We looked at, checked that one out. But I didn't feel confident driving it home. So we were about from 90 minutes, we're now about an hour from home, 60 minutes out. So I called a tow truck because we were able to drive it just like literally 100 feet forward. We found a little cul-de-sac area that we could park, that we could tell the tow truck driver where to go and not be stuck on the highway, which was more of a safety concern. So, I mean, at this point, I spent a lot of money. I was getting frustrated because you're like, man, I just spent a lot of money. Was this a good decision? Was this a bad decision? I don't know. I was hungry. I was frustrated. Anyway, put it on the tow truck. He drove it home. No problem. No sweat. Pretty happy. So then we got home. It was like maybe 9 o'clock at this point. Extremely dark. We get it off the tow truck and I'm just thrilled. We get in the driveway and then we can take a look and see what went wrong and what I need to fix. Obviously, I need tires. I knew that when I bought the car, but I didn't know what extent caused the whole damage, right? Well, one thing led to another, right? This is all, it gets crazy. So we started off looking at it, and there's so much play in the front suspension. It was shot, like, so bad that you're like, this is, you can't drive this. Like, I don't know why we tried to drive it. It was shot. So I ordered the suspension kit to then replace all those things. We bust a bunch of nuts, got all the disintegrated rubber bushings out of it, and then we got the the breaker bar to bust open the nuts and bolts because they were all like rusted on there. And every moment we're like, you said this was a we bought it a week in Cruiser Story, but my money is saying that you restored it was well in the late 80s, not anywhere near modern times. So after we updated the or fixed the suspension, put the new suspension in with the idle arms and then the bushings for the tie rods and whatnot, we then looked at the front brakes and they were really bad. So we ordered a brake kit. We ordered a cylinders, the slave cylinders, brake cylinders rather. So for the front ones, we fixed all those. We got them all nuclear grease, something like that. We all got them all nice and pretty, and then we started flooding the brakes, and we had more issues. Like, it wasn't holding pressure at all. Well, we then decided maybe we need to look at the back brakes, because we didn't really look at them. Well, I thought the front brakes were bad. The back brakes were, like, horrid. It was, like, I guess it was scary. So the back brakes was nothing but, like, bare metal and an eighth of an inch dug into the drum. So the drum should have been, like, pretty smooth, but it was bumpy. You could almost comb your hair with the ridges in that thing. So we got those off with lots and lots of work. We were hammering at it for probably an hour, maybe 2 hours on the driver's side drum, because the individual who put the tires back on put the springs on the brake calipers. I found this out later. You put those on backwards, so it was basically pulling them in too tight. So because they were pulling too tight, when you hit the brake and expand it, it just basically buggered up the whole engineering for the proper that. So we replaced the brake cylinders, the shoes, the drums for the back brakes. No problem. Well, we tried to put some more brake fluid in there, couldn't hold any fluid. We looked further and we found out there was a crack in the brake line. Well, we think that was from the guy who didn't know what he's doing when he towed my car. He think he put the cable or the he ratcheted it down on over top the brake line, so it cracked that. Thankfully, it was like a $6 part at Napa, not AutoZone or anything, but Napa. We bent it ourselves, put it back in, no problem. Well, we went back and then we're still not getting any pressure on the brakes proper. Like, it wasn't leaking or anything, but to avoid, like, you want brakes to work when you're in a motor vehicle. So we went ahead, I purchased the master cylinder so that we can get the brakes to just work 100%. So all the brakes are all good, all the front suspension all good. So we got it all working, and from that point, I was rocking and rolling, because then I barely got it to the tire shop. We got them to put the new tires on. We gave them alignment and told them it was extremely out of whack, and I paid the extra couple bucks for them to take a look at it. And sure enough, voila, they got it all perfect and it was driving so smooth. Like, I thought it felt like a brand new car, like driving on air, because that suspension was so bad. It was like, no, I mean, obviously here, you understand from my tone of voice what I'm explaining. But that was just so bad that I shouldn't have even driven it in the first place. I then installed the seat belts, obviously, when I got back in, so I'm able to buckle up, and so on and so forth. I think the biggest achievement too is when we had this in the garage, I was able to take the radio out because the tape player didn't work. I took that whole thing apart and found out that there was a little rubber band that blew up and turned into goo. Replaced those and then put it back. Tape player kind of works, not perfect, but kind of works. And then got a new battery. But moving forward from that. So we got all of this done between September and Thanksgiving. And I was driving it to work, to the office, once we returned to full in office, whatever. Back to office schedule, per se. So I was able to drive my classic car and have some fun with it and learn the quirks, such as, like, the door has to, like, you have to very press the button on the passenger side very lightly so it engages. There's just a problem with that door. And then on the passenger side, this was another problem, the rod to open the door broke. So I ended up was looking online for parts, and they wanted $40 for this rod, this like eighth of an inch thick steel rod that has a hook on it. I was like, No way. I'm not paying $40 for that. I went to Home Depot. I just knew. I knew what I needed. I went to Home Depot, got myself like a 30-inch rod for like, I don't know, $6, and I bent it myself. And it was long enough I can do it for both doors. So if the driver's side door has a problem, I can fix that. That was like a claim to fame. I felt pretty good about that. Yes, I've changed just about everything. So you're getting it. You're getting it. Like, I anticipated I only needed tires. But yeah, you can tell. Our part list is much, much growing. So over Thanksgiving, which was the next kind of break. So I've been driving this car for maybe a month or so. And I'm kind of enjoying it. Just deciding if I really want to keep it, if I want to flip it, or if I just, I don't know. I couldn't decide yet. I didn't know what my path with the car was. But I knew if I wanted to flip it, I needed to do some more general maintenance. So over Thanksgiving, my grandfather came by, and the day before he left, we had him take a listen to see if the engine sounded right or if I needed to tweak the carburetor. And come find out, the carburetor was pretty much shot, which made sense because none of the valves kind of stood there. It was kind of just working, which was magical. And then the it was only firing 7 out of the 8 cylinders. So one of the cylinders wasn't getting fired, probably because of spark plug, spark wire, God only knows. So I took that as the action. We'll get a distributor, spark plug wires, and carburetor. Call it even, put it all together, and it should just fire like a kitten, and we should be great and have some fun with it, right? You think it'd be that simple? I'm telling you, it's not. So I took the carburetor off. I took the valve covers off so that I can then get new seals for those because it wasn't on there proper. Put some Permatex around it, Permatex Blue, and we sealed those all up. And during this phase, we took the distributor off, got the new distributor, or not yet. I painted it, so it looks, well, at least it pops, so it looks like I did something. And during this process, I started noticing that the wire harness for the top, at least, didn't look right. It just didn't seem right. Well, we're putting it all back, kind of not back together, but we're just looking around. And we saw one wire, and we kind of just bent it just to get out of the way. And it went snap, like spaghetti. And you're like, what? We found another one, snap, like spaghetti. Well, I decided, fine, you know what? I don't want a fire hazard. So let me just take it all out, and I'll buy a new one. I will say, best $22 I've ever spent, because the stupid one, no joke, that cable was beyond a fire hazard. Like, I don't know how the car drove, because, like, it was so bad, like the entire wiring harness for that, like melted on itself, and we had like the positive and negative, like the shielding on it fried, so like they were like the terminals were almost touching each other. Like, this is arky sparky, like fire hazard. Needless to say, got the new one, plug and play, found a diagram, plug it all in, and it was all pretty much good. Took the through this, we changed the radiator hoses, and We flushed it a couple times, and we did it once, and I got a leak somewhere, so I thought it was a hose, blah, 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 you're just annoyed. So we drained it all again, waited a couple days, put the new hoses back on that we had. We just, you know, you get burnt out a little bit, or you just need to take a mental break, maybe you miss something. Same thing, it was dripping, like, there's some problem. Okay, whatever. So we moved around that, we said, we'll come back to that. So we changed the transmission fluid, put a new transmission filter in it. That was kind of fun. Did the oil filter. That was easy. And then we're like, okay, the last thing we need to do to make this kind of work is put the radiator back in, because we took it out so we could get some room, and then we can just rewire it. So we put the radiator back in. We put the hoses back in. We flush it. No problem. Well, we go and we just sit there, and then all of a sudden we hear a yeah, it sounded like just bubbles. Like, what's that coming from? And come to find out the hard way, there was a crack in the water pump on the hose nipple connection, like where the hose clamped together. Like, really? Like, really? And yeah, I could have probably JB welded it, but I wasn't going to take my chances. Thankfully, what's the place? O'Reilly's had one in stock for like $30. I'm like, you know what? cheap insurance is all this is. So I buy the water pump. I take all the bolts out myself, or the whole water pump out myself. We go in. I was extremely proud of myself. And then I came back in, put the new one in, and then I was having issues. Come to find out again, is two of the long bolts, or different sizes, were both stripped in the block. So thankfully not the long block, but just the block that the bolt passes through. So I went and I bought bolts, like $20 worth of bolts for this stupid problem. I got like a bolt that was an inch longer for both of them, and then put a nut on behind them so that I can torque it down to the specific torque wrench. And then during that process, I also bought a 90 degree heater hose wire for it. Oh, that's what I missed. So, man, I hate this car. So we got an elbow so that we can go from a literally like a 2-inch 90 degree turn from water pump to engine block so that it just fits better than just kind of forcing a 5/8 hose to it, because we tried, it just doesn't work. In addition to all this, we took apart, I'm going to rant about this. The 66 Mustang glove box is the dumbest, stupidest, and most idiotic design I've ever seen. It is an origami cardboard box, at least the one in my car. I'll have to check standards, so I'm just going to rant about it. This one, I spent probably 20 minutes trying to say, how does this come out? It's got screws in it, like metal screws, Phillips screws. They come out of the whole thing around. There's like 12 of them, or I'm like 8 of them maybe. I take them all out, and I'm like, why is it not coming out? Like, I can't put this underneath because there's this huge block, which is your heating vent thing, and I'm like, I can't get the box out. So come to find out, I was looking through some threads, making sure I was doing this right. I found one, and he's like, yeah, it's just, you just fold it at the seam. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. It's an origami box? So I found the two holes, and I squished them in, and I literally just pushed. Like, a lot of force push, and I pulled. I pushed, pulled, and pop, it came out. You're like, that is the dumbest. Like, you have this entire card, and it's like the engineer's like, yo, Phil, we're out of designs. How are we going to put the glove box in? He's like, dude, I got you. And he's like, picked up an old shoebox or something and already cut, like, origami did. Anyways, it was just, it's a pain to get out. It's a pain to put back in. That's all I'm going to say about it. So I took the glove box out to reveal this black blob, which is just this huge black object. It had a little dip on it, like a curved dip. So if you imagine that there's a square about the size of a deep shoebox, so like maybe a shoebox for boots, a boot box. So one of those next to a circle, like maybe a double size of Folgers scoop coffee. So it had this contraption, which is the heat core. So this inside of that, there's a heater core, which is like a mini radiator, and there's two hoses coming through the firewall into this box inside of the box has the heater core. Well, we were fixing things anyways, and we needed to, I don't even know why I took it out, but anyways, we were fixing things, and I said, hey, let's address this, because the little flaps or the little control valve arms on the, what's it called? The control arms on the dash doesn't necessarily work all the way. They're like kind of pulling, and the defroster is not working properly. So I said, we'll just address it. So we took the heater hose off of the engine block and the water pump. I think it's off the water pump too. No, it's just off the engine. Anyways, we took it off, disassembled it, and we feed these wires through the engine so that we can take this huge, literally double shoebox thing out of underneath the dash. Through some finagling, we got it out, and then I saw there was another box that was a small one, probably the size of half a shoebox. Like, if you took a Nike box and cut it in half, hot dog style, that's kind of the box that I pictured this other one, which is, it had two holes on the top of it so that it goes to the dash for the defrost unit on the glass for the front window. So there's two little vent hoses that goes to it that looks like the laundry hose thing that you go for the exhaust. Anyways, and then there's a little, we'll get to the flap in a minute. So I took both of those things out and we're like, we'll address all the wiring and all this stuff. And needless to say, this is inside and maneuvering around this probably 80 pound AC cooling unit that doesn't even work yet because I haven't plugged it back to electricity. But it's huge, it's ridiculous, and we're finagling around it because the stupid thing is heavy and it just doesn't want to move. It's bolted to the dash, like bolted with like 3/8 or 5/8 bolt. Anyways, so we get this heater core thing out, and then we split it open in half, and then we review the heater core, which is that little radiator thing. We take it out, we do some testing, and we find out that there's actually a pinhole in it. So every time antifreeze goes through it, the coolant goes through it, it would bubble up and splur out a little bit because there's a couple cracks or pinholes. And we're like, well, you know what? That's probably why some of my dash is getting wet. But it's just one more thing that can cause more issues. And I'm like, let's fix it. Another like 25, 30 bucks, Rock Auto. As you can see, this project's a hobby now. It's adding up. Anyways, so I get a new heater core. And then this whole plastic thing that's probably plastic or even, I don't even think it's fiberglass, but it's just janky. And there's a little door on it, on the circle cylinder, the Folger can. There's a little door that looks like a furnace door. Anyways, sleep. Okay. So on this door, there was a couple cracks and splits, and it just wasn't looking right, and it wasn't like the correct way, and there was some, like, again, cracks and splits. So I was like, you know what, we'll just fix this with some Flex Seal. I've used it for the guys at work. It's a water resistant and water whatnot, so it should be fine because it's a rubber based. So I get the Flex Seal, spray the whole thing, and man, does it look like a night and day. It looks like a brand new unit. It looks amazing. So we got it all here, got the new heater core in, we slapped it all back together, and then we put the new wire, new hoses through the firewall. We clamped them all together, and then I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I forgot the tiny box. And I was sitting there looking at the tiny box. I'm like, what's the purpose of this? Like, it didn't work last time. I couldn't get it aligned right last time for the flap. And then I saw it. I saw the puzzle piece that the other owner failed to see. The tiny box that he replaced for the heater defrost unit actually bolts to the boot box that I was describing. And actually, there's four screws that it kind of clamps onto, so that you can actually get heat from the heater core up to the window. It wasn't bolted on. It wasn't connected together. I was like, this is dumb, but this is exactly what was missing. This is why that wire wasn't working. That's why this wasn't working, is it wasn't combined together. So I screw it all together, and this thing is probably like 4.5 feet long at this point. It's ridiculous. Maybe even 4 feet. I'm exaggerating a little bit too much. But anyways, this thing's huge. I gotta figure out a way to wiggle it all the way back underneath the dash and up, and like kind of sits where your feet are above. So with some finagling, and then we dropped the huge 80 pound AC unit, moved it aside, we got it back in, and then we hooked it all up, and that was all good. And then I put all the stuff back on the inside, so that was like adjusting the AC unit and getting it more centered, because it was not centered in the least bit. I got it to a point where I liked it, and we got everything back on there, and we're like, we cleaned up, and my dad's like, I'm looking at him, I'm like, hey, I think we're done. I think we did everything we needed. We changed the oil, we did the tranny, we put everything back. I was out of parts. So that night, this is like, I don't even remember, but we pushed it out of the garage so we wouldn't have fumes, and we tried to start it. And I click it and went, I just didn't get any, like, purring. No grr. So we sit there, we got the timing adjusted, and still no luck. And then we think, thought it was just a tooth off on the distributor, so we fought with that. And you couldn't get the tooth right, so we just moved the plug wires over a notch so that it would be, instead of one on one, it would be the last one on one, and then one be the one over. Then it just wasn't working. Same thing. It kind of gave us a puff of white smoke, and we just kept rolling through things trying to get it all working. And through trying to think about what could be the wrong problem, we left it for a couple days, kept thinking in the back of my mind. We just need to figure out why it wasn't just firing, why it wasn't just going. And my dad came up to me, I think it was that Thursday night or whatever, and he's like, hey, you got any plans? I'm like, I want to figure out my Mustang so that this weekend we can go to my house and do some more housework. And then he's like, hey, I bet you I know the exact problem. He's like, it just dawned on me. I wonder if the plugs are counterclockwise and not clockwise, because we put them on clockwise and they probably should be on counterclockwise. And we're like, you know what? Sure. Okay. That would make sense. If it spins the other direction, that's why we're getting that kind of not starting roll, but it kind of was the other way roll. So we go out there and we change all the spark plug wires on the distributor in the inverse order that they're in, and I turn the key and it was loud, it was awesome, it was growling, and we're like, yes. And so we go through it and we test it, and we just couldn't get it to like idle right. It was still hissing, and I had no power. So we got it rolling and got it tuned with the adjustment screws just right, but we were hearing a kss, and I couldn't, like, we didn't know what was going on. We were pretty sure we had all the vacuum lines plugged properly into the vacuum advanced and so on and so forth. But we got to the point where we were able to turn it on and get up the driveway, and I had, like I said, almost no power, and we go through the community, and I was going maybe 10 miles an hour at max, maybe 15. It just wouldn't go up, so we got back home, we put it down in the garage, and parked it, and we'll make an appointment with the folks up the street, which is Rusty Nuts. Rusty Nuts, they just specialize in older vehicles. I think they do more bike restorations or whatnot, but I've seen them before. They do older stuff. So this week I called them and said, hey, I got my car. I just need someone who has mindset or has the knowledge to be able to tune my vehicle and tell me what I'm missing, what's going on. So I called them. They had a drop appointment, so I was able to sneak out at lunch, come home, and I barely got the car up the driveway. Like, I had to roll it backwards. And once it was at the bottom of the hill, my dad's like, floor it like you stole it. So pedal to the metal, it was going, and I'm in neutral. And then I let go, dropped into low gear, and I kept hammering it. And we go, woo, up the hill. And I made it to the top. And then thankfully, I was able to slug it to the restoration or the shop, which is about 2 miles down the road. We get it there. I'm trying to park it, but then they came out and said, no, pull it in the garage. So they pull it in the garage, and the guy's like, what's that sound? I think that's like a vacuum leak. And we're like, yeah, you're telling me, and we just can't figure it out. Well, he looks at it, and no joke, 1 minute later, he puts his finger on this little hole on the back of the on the block, and he's like, there's your problem. And the whole thing quieted down, and we're like, what? So he found it, like, immediately. So he found a little rubber plug. He had it just laying around. He put it on the thing, and we're like, hey, I just need one of you guys to tune this, like, with the carburetor, because the fuel-air mixture wasn't right on the new carburetor. And he's like, yeah, if that's what you're looking for, we can do that right now. I'm like, okay, cool. So we're sitting there in the shop, like, right in the front bay, and he comes out with a little nubby screwdriver, and he screws in and teaches me how to fine-tune that air ratio. And he's like, wow, it was way off, because it was like 4 turns out and needs to be maybe 2 turns out, but you do it in a half turn increment. So we got it all tuned right, and I went from start, key in ignition, twisted, and you're like, oh, it sounds good. Oh, it sounds so good. So that fixed everything. And as soon as I turn it up, we back up. It was kind of almost misfiring, or just, it was extremely growly is all I could say. So what we think is happening now, this is where we are today, is the I think because now I'm running on all 8 cylinders properly with a new carburetor, which gives us the right fuel mixture that has got so much power, I blew out the exhaust valves for the exhaust manifold. So that'll be the upcoming project on my Mustang. And as you guys can see, we go from want to drive a classic car to currently where I'm at is learning all of these mechanical stuff that I now know. And now I can now teach you guys, or you guys can learn through my wisdom of my mistakes or my chapter, not even mistakes, but my journey through this classic car ownership at a young age. You learn that that doesn't look as pretty on the outside as it necessarily does on the inside. It may look and have a good paint, which mine kind of does. It doesn't really matter. It's a daily driver. But at the end of the day, I take ownership and pride that I was able to modify and fix and repair what was needed to be fixed. I look forward to the next one, which I'm anticipating the bolts are going to break on the exhaust the exhaust manifold, because they always do, is what I've been told. There's almost no way that WD-40 is going to let those go, because they're pretty much just rusted and welded on through the exhaust fumes. Needless to say, that'll be a fun next chapter to tell you guys about. If I keep the car, if I sell the car, I don't know yet. But for now, I'm learning a lot. And I cannot wait to see where this journey goes to. Thanks for listening to me jabble around about my car. I hope to catch you next time.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining me on this random session of Random Talks. I hope you learned something or at least had a great time. And as always, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Until next time, cheers.